Yeah, I think there's a great sense of loss in so many circles today. You know, he was championed in Derry because he championed Derry himself when he opened up Fieldale along with Stephen Ray in 1980. And I mean, I didn't know either of them, and I just was very fortunate to have known the director of the first play translations, and that was Arthur Breen, who came to me and asked me would I like to work with him. So I was the assistant stage manager, and I mean, it changed my life. It was just so remarkable, everything that went on. These were giants, really, in the literary world that were involved in the production of that first play and so many other wonderful plays for at least 10 years after that. I mean, there was Tom Pollan and Davy Hammond, who was a musician, and Tom Kilroy later joined, and Stephen, of course, who set Fieldale up with Brian. And they were just all amazing. And of course, Seamus Heaney, I shouldn't forget. I mean, extraordinary people, and a wonderful, wonderful experience. That play that we did when we went around Ireland and we toured for quite a long time, and it was extended, had an extended run later in Dublin. And it was just like this, it was like people had been waiting for this experience. They were hanging from the rafters, you know, no matter where we went, in tiny little drafty halls and schools, up in Cross MacLean, down in Sligo, Ballyshannon, all over the place. Just an extraordinary, extraordinary experience. And when Brian embraced you, you became part of his wider cultural family. As people have said already, he was a private man. But if you got to know the warmth of him and his wife Anne and his family, you were very blessed, really, because they were extraordinary people. He was an extraordinary man.
What type of man was Brian Friel?
Well, he was known for his wit. He was very, very funny. He used to have great parties. He and Anne used to host great parties up at Ishkeheen, outside Muff, where he lived in those days, and then later they moved to Greencastle. But the parties were legendary, and that was his way. Every time a new play started, they would bring everybody together, all the new actors, and this was how they welcomed everybody in and made everybody bond together. We became a team very rapidly. And he could play the piano, and he would sit down and often make up witty songs about what was current in the news in the day, or even about people in his own cultural life. He was sharply intelligent. I mean, you end up, you know, regurgitating cliches about Brian, but he was very witty, very compassionate. I mean, today even Nell McCafferty has posted up that she remembered when she was cast into a kind of wilderness at a time many years ago, when she said on radio that the IRA campaign had some legitimacy, and she was banned really from the TV, from all the broadcasters, and Brian wrote to her to offer her succour, really, and offered her their Donegal home if she wanted to come and have a break and a holiday. I remember many years ago meeting the playwright Sebastian Barry, a novelist, and likewise he around that time had been cast into the wilderness for some play he'd written that critics savaged, and he talked about the kindness of Brian Friel having written to him, and you know, supported him at a very, very difficult time in his life.
Do you think he used that experience within himself that he had, I suppose, with his beliefs, and he saw it in others then?
Well, I think he really understood the human condition. There's no doubt about that. We see it in his works. I mean, he just had remarkable insights, even from a very young age. I mean, I was aware of him, first of all, through Philadelphia, Here I Come, which was a huge hit on Broadway, and that happened to him quite young. And it's an extraordinary work when you look at it. You know, sometimes, you know, you look at these plays that have been played out a lot, and they seem routine almost now, but actually that was such an innovative work in its day. And such a great kind of understanding of the relationships between fathers and their children. You know, I think he must have been talking about his own relationship with his father there to an extent. And in all his plays, you can see how he wrote for women especially well. And he just went in deep into the human mind and the effect that, people's relationships had on each other. He was a remarkable writer, there's no doubt about it, and his work is to be enjoyed for many, many years to come. We've lost him, but we have that great legacy of work.
One of the works that you touched on earlier there, translations. Mm. I mean, it cannot be underestimated, the power and the significance of translations.
No, I mean, I think when we were performing that play, I was just a stage assistant stage manager, which is the lowest job, but we were a team. Nobody was less equal than anybody else. And so you experienced every part of it.
What was that atmosphere like? I can imagine it must have been electric in the Guildhall.
Well,
with him there.
Electric's the word. I always remember the first night, actually. The first night, nobody knew how this would all pan out. And when the cast went out to take their bow, Marlene Jefferson was the first female mayor of the city, and she was sitting in the front row, and she was a unionist mayor. And there was a sense of trepidation about, you know, how it would be received. And she stood up and started the standing ovation, and the whole hall followed in behind her. So her great generosity in itself was remarkable, but the whole atmosphere was just ecstatic. And the reporters from all, they'd come from everywhere. They'd come, you know, they'd come from America, they'd come from London. And it was like, you know, first night in London or in New York. And that was what they wanted to do, to make Derry, you know, a centre that of excellence, really. And they were all rushing to their phones. Those days we didn't have email. They were all rushing their phones to send their copy. It was just, I can't describe it, the euphoria was just amazing, you know, and we were very proud. I remember this great sense of pride to be part of such an extraordinary experience, you know. And then everywhere we went around the country, the word had spread. And I don't even know if people particularly realised what it was they were witnessing, but they just knew it was for them, that it was a voice for them. Because, of course, that was a big thing that Field Day tried to do. They were establishing, having a fifth dimension, the cultural dimension of ideas, where the politics of Northern Ireland could be discussed in a different way. You know, they created a space there for people to articulate something that was difficult to articulate.